Good evening, everyone, and welcome to eBible's Bible study tonight, and also question and answer later this evening. To begin with, we will have a Bible study in the book of Esther. This is study number 21, and I'd like to turn to Esther chapter 8 and read from verse 14 through 17. Where it says, "So the post that rode upon mules and camels went out, being hastened and pressed on by the king's commandment, and the decree was given at Shushan the palace. And Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad. The Jews had light and gladness and joy and honor, and in every province and in every city whithersoever the king's commandment and his decree came, the Jews had joy and gladness, a feast and a good day. And many of the people of the land became Jews, for the fear of the Jews fell upon them." And we're going to try and cover these verses. Well, verse 14 we've looked at the last couple of times, and we've noticed that God is indicating that this command, this new decree of Purim that will deliver the Jews, and which is coming after the 17th day of the second month, we can understand spiritually to mean coming after Judgment Day, May 21. This is information that God is opening up for us at this time, for those of us who are living during these days of testing, this time of judgment on the world. It is severe judgment when God has shut the door of salvation. God calls it torment. 5 months of torment, it says in Revelation 9, but that 5 months has been doubled. But what was true of the 5 months is true of the entire doubled period of time, 10 months. This 294 days are days of torment, because it's extremely sorrowful that there is no longer salvation available, that the door to heaven has been shut. But yet God has good news. He has good news to proclaim to his people. And that's why this decree is going out. And that's why the king's commandment is moving the messengers, moving the postmen to hasten and press on. They're going as quickly as they can. And it's very similar to the earlier commandment. Likewise, they hasten to carry the message. Whenever God gives a message, whenever the King of Kings gives a commandment, then it should be carried out speedily, no matter what it is. And likewise, today, God is commanding his people to share this information about Purim with others. And we see with the wording we'll look at a little later on just why and what wonderful good news this is. Well, it says in verse 15, "And Mordecai went out from the presence of the king in royal apparel of blue and white, and with a great crown of gold, and with a garment of fine linen and purple. And the city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad." And again, Shushan is a word that identifies with lily. And Jesus is the lily of the valley. So it is a word that identifies with Christ. And we can see why this statement is made. The city of Shushan rejoiced and was glad, because Mordecai is a picture of Christ. And here he is being clothed and honored and lifted up. And so this indicates that the city of Christ, the body of believers, rejoice and are glad when this takes place because Jesus is being exalted. And that's exactly what's in view with all the language of Mordecai going out in royal apparel. Now, Mordecai was not the king. He was given great authority under the king. He was given the king's ring so that he could write decrees in the king's name and seal it with the king's ring. And so he had the authority of the king in many things, but he was not the king. And yet, this is the second time in the book of Esther that we're reading of Mordecai being clothed in the royal attire. Back in Esther chapter 6, when Haman had come in to ask of the king, to make request of him to have Mordecai hanged on the gallows he had made. And then, of course, everything turned around because that night the king could not sleep. And he had the chronicles read to him. And in the portion that was read to him, it was remembered that Mordecai had told of Bigthana and Teresh, two of the king's doorkeepers, who sought to lay hands on the king. And the king asked, what honor and dignity has been done to Mordecai? And they said, nothing. So the king asked, well, who is in the court? And Haman was in the outer court because he was all ready to request of the king to put Mordecai to death. We can see how God works, how he just works through events and circumstances, and certainly he is a God of providence, and all things work together for good to for his people, and even the king's failure to sleep and his insomnia work together for good for the people of God. When the wicked were rising up in the person of Haman to harm God's people, not only Mordecai, but all the Jews, well, then at that time the king could not sleep. And that reminds us of the Psalm 121, verses 1 through 5, tells us that God keeps Israel and that he will not slumber nor sleep, because God is watching over Israel, and there it would be a reference to the elect, and protecting them. So he's always on guard. He's always there to protect the child of God. And that was the case with Ahasuerus, who typifies God. He could not sleep at a point when the Jews were in danger due to Haman. And so Haman comes in thinking to make requests, and certainly will be granted. He assumes that Mordecai will be hanged, but before he can ask, he is questioned by the king. What shall be done unto the man whom the king delights to honor? King Ahasuerus asked Haman. And Haman, in his pride and in his complete arrogance, thinks, well, who would the king delight to do honor more than to myself? So he decides to tell the king what he himself would want to be honored with. And so he says in verse 8 of Esther 6, let the royal apparel be brought which the king useth to wear, and the horse that the king rideth upon, and the crown royal which is set upon his head. And let this apparel and horse be delivered to the hand of one of the king's most noble princes, that they may array the man withal whom the king delighteth to honor, and bring him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaim before him, thus shall it be done to the man whom the king delighteth to honor. And the king said to Haman, make haste, and take the apparel and the horse, as thou hast said, and do. Even so to Mordecai the Jew that sitteth at the king's gate, let nothing fail of all that thou hast spoken. Then took Haman the apparel and the horse, and arrayed Mordecai, and brought him on horseback through the street of the city, and proclaimed before him, thus shall it be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor. And here Mordecai had been sitting in sackcloth and ashes, and he was taken from the sackcloth. He was robed with royal apparel. The king's crown was placed on his head. He rode the king's horse, and the king's most trusted servant, Haman, proclaimed before all, thus shall be done unto the man whom the king delighteth to honor. Now Haman said all these things. These are the things that should be done, because that's what he wanted done. Haman had a desire to be like the king. He wanted to be king himself, and that's why he's such an accurate picture spiritually of Satan, who desires to be like God. But the problem here, the reason why everything backfired on Haman, is it is the 17th day of the second month, when he comes into the king from the outer court. And that outer court would relate to what we read in Revelation 11, that which is without was given unto the Gentiles to tread underfoot. Satan has been ruling in the churches and congregations throughout the Great Tribulation period. Up until the 17th day of the second month, he's in the outer court, trampling upon the churches and congregations. And then he's called in. He's called into a more intimate place with the king. The king is calling him into an area where he has not been. And yet it's not for his good. It's not for any benefit, but it is to, spiritually, it is to bring judgment on Satan. That Satan goes from reigning, from ruling as the man of sin for 23 years, to being judged. And the judgment began early that morning. He must do it. He must clothe Mordecai. He must put the crown upon his head and then lead him around. Because Mordecai represents Christ, and now Christ is victorious, and it is a day of humiliation for Satan, a day of shame for him. And yet early that morning, the very beginning of Judgment Day, here we find that Mordecai is already attired, already crowned. But you know what it says here, that it goes on to say in verse 12 of Esther 6, and Mordecai came again to the king's gate, but Haman hasted to his house mourning and having his head covered. So the day was not done. Esther had not yet had her banquet. And so, once again, though, later the very same day, on the 17th day of the second month, Haman would be put to death, hanged on the gallows that he had built for Mordecai. And then the house of Haman would be given to Esther, and Esther the king, in giving Mordecai the ring, gave Mordecai authority, and then Esther recognized that authority and set Mordecai over the house of Haman. And what it's telling us by this language of the royal attire and the crown and the colors even in Esther 8 verse 15 of blue and white, and then a garment of fine linen and purple. It is language that is really identifying Mordecai as though he were the king, because he is picturing the Lord Jesus Christ, who is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And the day that Christ is triumphant over all of Satan's kingdom, the kingdom of the whole world and all the kings within it. And we've noticed this before. We've seen this before. Actually, if we go back to Numbers 24, there's a prophecy there that relates to this day, May 21 of 2011, the day of Christ's exaltation and Satan's humiliation. It says in Numbers 24, verse 7, he shall pour the water, and he, here the pronoun is pointing to Christ, out of his buckets, and his seed shall be in many waters, and his king, Christ, shall be higher than Agag, and his kingdom, Christ's kingdom, shall be exalted. Now, we've seen a few times in the book of Esther that Haman is the son of Hammedatha the Agagite. The Agagite, so they are in the line of Agag. And Agag also would typify Satan, and Numbers 24:7 is a prophecy indicating that the Lord Jesus Christ, who is king, shall be higher than Agag, and Christ's kingdom shall be exalted over Agag. And just as we're finding in the book of Esther that Mordecai is exalted over Haman in Agagite. And we saw spiritually what took place on May 21 through passages like we find in 2 Chronicles 36. Tells us of the end of the 70-year period, which typified the actual 23-year Great Tribulation, and then Babylon fell, and the Medes and the Persians took the kingdom. And then we find in verse 22 of 2 Chronicles chapter 36, it says, "Now in the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia." Cyrus, you could go to Isaiah 44:28, where God calls Cyrus his shepherd, or Isaiah 45:1, where God calls Cyrus his anointed, and he's another clear type of Christ. "In the first year of Cyrus, king of Persia, that the word of Jehovah spoken by the mouth of Jeremiah might be accomplished, Jehovah stirred up the spirit of Cyrus, king of Persia, that he made a proclamation throughout all his kingdom, and put it also in writing, saying, Thus saith Cyrus, king of Persia, all the kingdoms of the earth hath Jehovah God of heaven given me, and he has charged me to build him a house in Jerusalem." And then he issues the proclamation that the Jews may go up and build the house. But we're interested in the timing of Cyrus's decree here and what he is saying as he conquers Babylon. It's the year 539. The 70-year period is ended. This would be equivalent to May 21, which ended the 23-year Great Tribulation, and that's the day Babylon, the kingdom of Satan, fell, and Christ took the kingdom of Satan, just as Cyrus took the the kingdom of Babylon. And notice all the kingdoms of the earth has Jehovah God of heaven given me. It's actually repeated in Ezra 1. God said it again in verse 2. Thus says Cyrus, king of Persia, Jehovah God of heaven has given me all the kingdoms of the earth. And you know, this is not a small matter, because there were some grounds for Satan to say that he was the ruler, and the Bible actually calls Satan in many places like a ruler, and God actually loosed him to take his seat in the temple. And to take your seat means you are ruling as a king. And God pictured Satan as the beast that rose up in Revelation 13. And the identification as the beast only identifies with the great tribulation time. And it says in verse 5 of Revelation 13, and there was given unto him a mouth speaking great things and blasphemies, and power or authority was given unto him to continue 42 months. And again, a different figure, but still representing the same period known as the Great Tribulation. So the beast was given authority. Who gave him the authority? Well, it does say something here about the dragon giving the beast authority, but who gave the dragon authority? God did when he loosed him. God's the one who loosed Satan's binding so that he could take his seat. God's the one who departed out of the church so he could enter in. If God didn't do it and didn't allow it, it wouldn't have happened. So God's the one who gave him the authority. And then notice in verse 7 of Revelation 13, and it was given unto him to make war with the saints and to overcome them. And he did throughout the 23-year, especially at the very beginning when the two witnesses were slain. And then Satan continued the assault on the churches throughout the entire 23 years. And it goes on to say, continue to say in verse 7, and power, that's the word sometimes translated authority, was given him over all kindreds and tongues and nations, and all that dwell upon the earth shall worship him whose names are not written in the book of life of the Lamb slain from the foundation of the world. At the beginning of the Great Tribulation, Satan, called the beast in Revelation 13, was given tremendous authority over the world and over the church. He ruled the churches, and we can see just how wicked the churches have become. He ruled over nations and tongues, all the unsaved whose names are not written in the book of life. And we can see how wicked the world has become over this great tribulation period. And so it was a drastic change. It was an enormous change when May 21 came and the great tribulation ended and judgment day came and God deposed Satan. He put him down. He removed him from authority in the church. He removed him from authority in the world. And Christ now is the authority over all the kingdoms of the earth. Now, this is also said in Isaiah 14 when we're reading about the parable of the king of Babylon. And it says in verse 4, that thou shalt take up this proverb against the king of Babylon and say, how has the oppressor ceased? The golden city ceased. That would be Babylon. Jehovah has broken the staff of the wicked and the scepter of the rulers. He who smote the people in wrath with a continual stroke. This is referring to Satan spiritually, or the king of Babylon in this proverb. He that ruled the nations in anger is persecuted and none hindereth. The whole earth is at rest and is quiet. They break forth into singing. Yea, the fir trees rejoice at thee and the cedars of Lebanon, saying, since thou art laid down. Now, let's just stop here. This is a parable. It's a proverb. The cedars of Lebanon are referring to the righteous. You can look at Psalm 92:12 that likens the righteous to cedars of Lebanon. And so that would be the believers. And notice what they're saying. Since thou art laid down, this is a reference to Satan, who is laid down or put down on judgment day, no feller is come against us. Hell from beneath is moved for thee to meet thee at thy coming. It stirreth up the dead for thee, even all the chief ones of the earth. It has raised up from their thrones all the kings of the nations. And they shall speak and say unto thee, art thou also become weak as we? Art thou become like unto us? That is dead, because it's speaking of those in the grave. And Satan... God uses the language he's killed, but of course he still exists. But in his rule, in his authority, it is as though he's been slain. It goes on to say in verse 11, thy pomp is brought down to the grave, and the noise of thy vials, the worm is spread under thee, and the worms cover thee. How art thou fallen from heaven, O Lucifer? Son of the morning, how art thou cut down to the ground, which didst weaken the nations? And then it goes on, and the whole passage is really a description of judgment day when Satan is usurped or put down. He loses his rule. Now this is, some might say, oh, well, okay, but that's talking about the very end of the world. That's language that is describing when Christ has come and destroyed the world and then Satan's put down. No, because we have Daniel chapter 7 to help us. And here God gives us information. He gives us a description of Satan being slain, and yet it's not the very end. There's still time that continues on, and we would never be able to understand this unless we had a book like Esther. And in Esther, we find Haman, a type of Satan, is killed on the 17th day of the second month. Yet time continues. That could have been an excellent place to end the book. The threat is over, and the enemy of the Jews is hanged. He's destroyed. So certainly God could have ended the book, and Esther and Mordecai could have sat with the king, and we would just know all would work out well. But God didn't end the book there. Actually, it continues on for a while longer, because Haman, who typifies Satan, is slain the 17th day of the second month, but he is killed in the midst of a timeline that leads to a day of destruction, which comes at the end of the year, of the Hebrew year, in the 12th month. And so the historical account in the book of Esther continues 10 months after Haman is killed. And it's interesting that we thought after May 21 there would be 5 months of time, but now we've learned God has doubled it to 10 months. And that's exactly the length of time in the book of Esther, from the 17th day of the second month until the last day of Purim on the 15th day of the 12th month. There is this 10-month period of time. And what happens at the end of the days? What happens when Purim comes, the day that was chosen by Lot? Well, Haman had 10 sons. And those 10 sons are killed on the 13th day of Adar. And then on the 14th day, those 10 sons who are already dead are hanged again. They're killed a second time. In other words, even though you can't kill someone physically a second time, they're already dead. But that's really what is being portrayed. They're hanged even while they're dead. And those 10 sons are a further representation of Satan, because even though he was put down on May 21, he did not cease to exist. He continues to exist. And you say we would never understand what we're going to read in the book of Daniel without the understanding of how God has now laid out his judgment plan. He began with a spiritual judgment on Satan and on the world, because he shut, and also, excuse me, he also completed the judgment on the church in the sense that they were cast into fire and brimstone immediately on May 21. That is, all those that were in the churches previously have no hope of salvation, because they did not come out of the church. And then when God shut the door to heaven on May 21, well, that was it. But then for the rest of the world, even though from our perspective we can still pray for them, and from our perspective there's hope for them, and so we can pray for mercy. We can pray, O Lord, having had mercy. That is, could it be that you have already saved these people before you shut the door? And we can hope for that. Having had mercy, have mercy now today upon those we're praying for. But all this took place spiritually, and then there's been a double portion or a doubling of the judgment. The cup that was filled should have been 5 months, but God has doubled it to 10. And in Daniel 7, it says in verse 9, I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow, and the hair of his head like the pure wool. His throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousand thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were open. I beheld then, because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. There it is. Satan has met his end. The beast of Revelation. It's judgment day. It's immediately after the tribulation. And he's destroyed. Well, that's the language here. But look at verse 12. As concerning the rest of the beasts, they had their dominion, that would be their authority, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and time. Now, how could we ever understand that? It certainly is judgment day. The Ancient of Days is sitting, just like we read in Revelation 20, that there's God on a great white throne. Here the Ancient of Days is seated, and the judgment is set, it says. The books were open, just like we read in Revelation 20, and the beast is slain, and his body destroyed and given to the burning flame. That's the fire and brimstone. And so that's the end of the world. No. No, it's not. What, if it is, then what is verse 12 talking about? The rest of the beasts had their dominion taken away, but their lives were prolonged for a season in time. There is time still. And now we understand it. Now we get it. Haman helps us a great deal. There's time until the ten sons are slain, even though their authority certainly was taken away. As their father died on the 17th day of the second month, they would have been viewed by all as having no authority at all, even though previously they could have been looked up to greatly because Haman was such a powerful man. But after he was hanged on a tree, and everyone hanged on a tree is cursed, and he was under the king's wrath, well, no one would have looked up to the ten sons of Haman. They spent their days in humiliation also, leading up to the day when they themselves would be hanged, even while dead, just like their father. And so, in other words, we have a perfect match with what we've learned from the book of Esther and God's judgment plan in Daniel and Esther. It matches perfectly. But even more than that, let's read verse 13 and 14 of Daniel 7. I saw in the night visions, and behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days, and they brought him near before him. Now, where have we heard that language before? Matthew 24, verse 29, immediately after the tribulation of those days shall the sun be darkened, and the moon shall not give her light, and the stars shall fall from heaven, and the powers of the heaven shall be shaken, and then shall appear the sign of the Son of Man in heaven, and then shall all the tribes of the earth mourn, and they shall see the Son of Man coming in the clouds of heaven with power and great glory. And that's exactly what Daniel 7, verse 13 is saying. I saw one like the Son of Man, behold, one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven. You know, we won't have time to get into it tonight, but that phrase, coming in the clouds, does not mean literally that Christ had to come in the clouds immediately after the tribulation. That is, after May 21, we didn't see Christ in the sky. We didn't see him in the clouds. But it does not mean that he did not come in the clouds. That this is not to be taken literally, just like Matthew 26 tells us, using the very similar language, when Jesus was before the high priest of Israel, it says in verse 64, Jesus saith unto him, Thou hast said, nevertheless, I say unto you, hereafter, and that's a word it means from now, shall ye see the Son of Man sitting on the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Then the high priest rent his clothes, saying, He has spoken blasphemy. What further need have we of witnesses? Behold, now ye have heard his blasphemy. Jesus told the high priest that he would see the Son of Man sitting in the right hand of power and coming in the clouds of heaven. Did the high priest of Israel ever see Jesus literally coming in the clouds of heaven? No. It has to be understood as spiritual. Christ was indicating that he would see, he would understand that Jesus was the Messiah, that he was who he said he was. And likewise, immediately after the tribulation, Christ came in the clouds, not literally, but in judgment. And it says here, back in Daniel 7, that one like the Son of Man came with the clouds of heaven and came to the Ancient of Days. And they brought him near before him. And there was given him, this is the Son of Man, who is Jesus, there was given him dominion and glory and a kingdom that all people, nations, and languages should serve him. His dominion is an everlasting dominion, which shall not pass away, and his kingdom, that which shall not be destroyed. We see the transfer of dominion, the transfer of power, of authority, that we also see in the book of Esther. Haman's ring was given to Mordecai. Haman's house was given to Mordecai. Haman's power and authority was given to Mordecai on the 17th day of the second month. Just as on that date, on May 21 of 2011, we can say that the Lord Jesus Christ has received all dominion and glory and kingdom, and that all people and nations and languages should serve him. Is his dominion an everlasting dominion? Yes, because it will go on forevermore. Here God has begun it in this world, but it will go into eternity. At this point, I think we'll have to stop. We've gone a little bit longer than I thought, and I would like to get time of question and answer in. So why don't we just take a break for a minute,